John Decker, our own White House correspondent, live this morning and talking, so much to talk about, but Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene still focused, still this whole stuff on the House Speaker and the vote. Take it away, John.
Well, I think that she has dropped this effort, and for a number of reasons, Jack. First reason, she got a phone call from the leader of the Republican Party, that's Donald Trump, over the weekend, and essentially he said to Marjorie Taylor Greene, knock it off. I support the Speaker. I'm supportive of him remaining in that position. I don't support your effort to oust him. And then she had two meetings with Speaker Johnson, one Monday, one yesterday, to clear the air. And the other reason, Jack, is because the numbers simply are not there. For all of her bluster, only two other House Republican members were supportive of her effort to try to oust Speaker Johnson. And that's the reason why that effort will likely not go forward.
And I thought, and I wasn't aware, but I did catch it over the weekend, that Trump would sort of step in to quell this, to show a couple things, really. I think he does. He did have that meeting with Johnson. I think it's just exactly as you said, but also it kind of does show on the Republican side who the kingmaker is a little bit, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I do know what you mean. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, when she gets a request to knock it off from someone that she supports, Donald Trump, I think that she listens. And so, look, she's weakened right now. There's no doubt about it. But what she's counting on is two things. One, that Republicans retain control of the House of Representatives after the November election. And two, that Donald Trump wins back the White House. If those two things happen, she is extremely strengthened in her position in the House of Representatives.
Good point. John Decker, thank you. John Decker, our own White House correspondent.
Thanks, Jack.
Brad Card, Card and Associates, one of our political analysts and all-stars as we crank it up on a Wednesday. Good morning, Brad.
Hey, Jack.
Game two tonight, Florida. I know you're flying down in the Lear.
Let's bring it, baby. Let's bring it. I'm super psyched, and I'm glad Pasta's from, you know, young guys. How about the young guys on the team, huh? All stepping up.
I love Carlo.
Wari, Geeky. Yeah, they're playing great.
I love Carlo. I saw some video of him getting off the bus the other day. You know what? A lot of people didn't notice the other night. I think it was before the Toronto Maple Leafs overtime win in Boston that the coach made them all stay in a hotel together, shut off the phones, going to focus. Interesting.
Yep.
Interesting you can do that with professional hockey players. Try that with other sports.
Well, no, they are supposed to be professionals and be dialed in. But I'll tell you, the Bruins were playing some pretty horrible hockey heading into Game 7.
Yeah, but kudos to the coach. Yeah, kudos to the coach for trying something. And he called out Pasta, said, you got to play a little better. We get a little more out of you.
Yep. Yeah, and he sure showed up, and he got the game winner.
Hey, before we
get the series winner.
Before we get to politics for a moment, have you seen, knowing you have, because you're a huge Patriots fan, have you seen on Netflix the Brady roast?
Oh, I watched it. Holy cow.
Holy mackerel. Did that blow political correctness and inclusive and wokeness out of the water? I mean, I couldn't believe what I was watching with Brady's parents sitting there.
Look, I'm a locker room kind of guy.
I know.
I was shocked. I really was. I was actually shocked at how it was kind of over the top, to be honest with you.
I was stunned. When Gronkowski and Julian Edelman are sitting there with their eyes open like Kevin Hart's going on, or the Jeff, what's his name, who does the roast? I mean, they were even cracking jokes about Aaron Hernandez, who took his own life in prison. I mean, come on. I mean,
a ton of jokes. It wasn't just a little bit.
Jeff Ross.
Yeah. It was tons of jokes.
Giselle and her karate boyfriend and the divorce.
Oh,
I mean,
Brady
was crying over that divorce. It's a terrible, some of that sacred ground. Wow.
It was that Kevin Hart guy. Oh, my God. Nothing was out of bounds, and they even hit Bob Kraft about his massage.
Oh, I know. You know what? Brad reminds me of. Remember when Andrew Dice Clay was in his prime?
Oh yeah.
Whew. Oh, Hickory Dickory.
Brutal, absolutely brutal.
I mean, you're not even on that bad with me on the golf course when I slice one. You're not that bad. All right.
Yeah, I'm known to use very colorful language, that's for sure. But
well, one time you did in Florida accuse me of taking your rangefinder, and it was stuck to your cart, and you chased me all around the golf course with every other word. All right, Brad, so we had John Decker, own White House correspondent. Basically sounds like Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Trump has told her, back off this Johnson push.
I think it's less Trump, and the fact is that Johnson, Speaker Johnson, has been meeting with her, which I wouldn't do if I were him. I think he's making a mistake by meeting with her to try to placate her. And she thinks that she's getting concessions from the speaker, which is a mistake. They ought not give her anything. I wouldn't even meet with her if I was the Speaker of the House. But he is, and I think that that's the reason why she's not moving forward right now. And oh, by the way, if she's a political realist, if she's half as smart as she thinks she is, she's got to realize that she doesn't have the votes to oust the Speaker right now, and that Democrats, in fact, would take a walk. And she's making this calculation thinking that they're going to vote for the Speaker. They're not going to vote for the Speaker. They're not going to show up and vote. All right. If they don't vote, it's like a vote for the Speaker. And that's all they would do. They won't cast a vote for the Speaker. They just won't vote. And that lowers the threshold, the number of majority votes. So, I mean, look at of the votes cast. So she's just inept. She's horrible. I can't say enough bad adjectives
you're chairing her, you're advising her reelection campaign.
Oh yeah, I'm sure I would do that. I just think that that's bad for government. People are not, they're not for governing. They want uber partisanship. They live in a la-la land that thinks that if you have a one-seat majority, you can dictate the House, the Senate, and the White House, which you can't. You've got to live in reality. And Republicans, if you're going to have the majority, you have to prove that you can govern. People, maybe 5% of the Republican base and 5% of the Democrat base, they love this chaos. They don't want you to work at all with the other side. But as a practical matter, you've got to work with the other side of the aisle. You're not going to get everything you want. That's just realistic. That's just living in reality.
Do you, this story that's been 48 hours now, it doesn't surprise me, about Social Security at some point here is, you know, they're running out, and Medicare.
Talk to Donald Trump, too, about this.
I'm going to ask
him. Saying he's not going to touch it. Look, this is wrong. Republicans and Democrats absolutely need to get together to address the deficits that we have. And you have to look at the entitlement programs. You have to look at the areas that are not subject to discretionary spending. And that's Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. And that's where you have to look at this. Those are tough decisions. I think Nikki Haley was the only one with any courage on the presidential campaign to talk about even trying to address that. Looking at, you know, people are living longer, they're healthier, they're working longer.
How do
they're
we
living longer.
Forget Biden and Trump. How do we save it?
You've got to address the entitlements. That's the only way to do it, Jack.
Yeah, but no one wants. They don't want to lose votes because one side will say if you address it, you want to cut it. You want to get rid of it.
No. The problem is that they have to look at reality again, which people don't want to do that. And they look at they live in a very short news cycle, if you will. They live in a 24-hour news cycle that the world is falling. And so what they say, they don't want to recognize that you're going to have to increase the age of Social Security. You're going to have to reform Social Security. So maybe what we do is we change the way people pay into Social Security as well.
Or maybe
the eligibility. Give incentives for people to opt out of Social Security.
Right.
That's what I would like to do, and I think that you could do that.
We talked
about it when Mitt Romney ran for president. Mitt Romney, you know, obviously uber wealthy. Did he need Social Security? You know, I listened to Warren Buffett start telling people that he wants to pay more taxes. How about not taking Social Security, Warren Buffett, or quite frankly, paying more taxes? Because the federal government will cash your check.
Yeah.
If you want to pay more taxes, they will cash your check.
Everyone's living longer. Not everyone, but some people, God forbid, don't have a choice. But I'm saying most people, America's aging longer. Look how old the president is. And so, you know, just talking about after a certain year, the retirement age moves to 70, for example. How much money would that save? You made a good point. If someone doesn't need a Social Security check, if a couple's planned and done better, they don't need that $4,000 or $5,000 a month. They can opt out and maybe get a tax break or something. You know, I mean, give them an incentive for opting out, you know?
That's exactly what I would do, Jack.
I think there's got to be common sense to doing it. Common sense.
People are correct when they say that they paid into Social Security and they earned it. And I agree with that. It is an earned benefit. You pay into Social Security. But certainly people who are really wealthy don't need that Social Security. If you've got $150 million, you don't need to do that. I think Judd Gregg has talked about stuff like that, who I think is one of the best fiscal managers. I would actually try to recruit Judd Gregg to take over and help address all the entitlement programs. I think he'd be a guy who I would start with and then add on a Rob Portman and a couple others. But we need to address our deficits. We need to address our entitlement programs. And we got to stop thinking about everybody's entitled. We have an entitled population that they're entitled to everything. We see young kids entitled to jobs. They're entitled to pay. They're entitled to this. And we kind of have gotten away from really being hardworking. Again, you start talking, you have the president talks, he wants to raise taxes, and it drives me crazy when a guy like Warren Buffett says, we should pay more in taxes, we should pay more. Well, then write a check. He can write a check. Anybody, any super wealthy guy that is out there saying, well, we ought to pay more in taxes, let them write a check then. They can do it, yep. And the government will cash the check.
Hey, what are you hearing in Washington about the governor's race taking shape here at home, New Hampshire?
Like, there's interest in the governor's race because of Kelly Ayotte, quite frankly, and obviously a former United States senator. So I think there's a lot of interest in it. It is not garnering the attention, certainly in Washington, D.C., that it is in New Hampshire. I know Kelly Ayotte's finding her way to D.C. to fundraise, which I think is very smart, and she was a very competent.
Are you hearing anything on the Democrat side between Cindy Warmington and Joyce Craig on who and when this is going to really get heated and who has an upper hand?
No, there hasn't been a lot of talk. And quite frankly, Jack, I'm not riding in the Democrat gubernatorial association circles. So I don't hear much about the Democrat side of the aisle. I do hear some excitement for Kelly Ayotte. The people do really like Kelly Ayotte and they would like to see her. They're glad that she's back in the political fray. Let's put it that way.
All right, Brad, I'll let you go on that. And game two tonight, I don't expect a 5-1 win. I take it. I think Florida was just a little flat from the layoff, but who knows?
And don't sleep on Jeremy Swayman. That guy is playing the best hockey of his life right now. He has been standing on his head.
And the last time we saw that was a guy named Tim Thomas. Do you notice the other night at the tense moment, the Toronto series, it was just tight, and they had a tight shot of Swayman, and he lifted his mask up. He was smiling.
He's smiling. He's loving it.
Did you see that? He's having a blast.
Hey, if you're an athlete, you live for moments like this. You live to be in a Game 7. You live to be in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You live to have this hard work in front of you and this excitement.
Like,
it's great.
It was like Patrick Mahomes with the Chiefs in the middle of a game. It's tight. He makes a completion. He's smiling like a little kid. When you can hit that zone, when you hit that zone, that's pretty cool. All right, Brad, make it a good one.
All right, we'll see you later.
Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent, kicking it off. Artificial intelligence communicating, Aaron, with the dead?
Yes. This is our worst nightmare from Black Mirror come to life. And I have a fear that every Black Mirror episode will ultimately be proven true. And we are already halfway there with this new afterlife communication via AI. So people grieve loss in different ways, but you have Snapchat, Replica, 11 Labs, Hereafter. Actually, 11 Labs, you guys know about this in New Hampshire. That was the AI company that had that fake robocall from President Joe Biden. So we know it's pretty accurate. But these are just some of the companies that allow users to create avatars of deceased loved ones. So basically, the generative AI tool, they use algorithms to create new video, new text, new audio, new code. And that new stuff can basically try to answer questions the way someone who died might have answered them. Mm. Now, of course, accuracy, that's going to depend on the information that you put into the AI. But the concept of communicating with the deceased is not new. Just doing it via artificial intelligence is. Jack, I'm going to give you a quick example. This is a true story. 25-year-old girl from Illinois. Mm-hmm. Her husband died in February of 2023.
Wow.
He was a chef. Mm-hmm. She misses him. She uploaded his social media profile, a lot of his digital footprint, mm-hmm. into Snapchat's My AI. Mm-hmm. She now messages Kyle, the ingredients she has left in the fridge, and he suggests what to make for dinner. That's where
that's
we are.
Mind-blowing.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And the question
I have to process that one, because there's good and bad in that, right?
Exactly, exactly. And that's the question. You know, is this going to help or hinder the grieving process?
Wow. Unbelievable. Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio. That's food for thought. No pun intended. Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks, Jack.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Good morning, Rory.
Hey, Jack. Good morning.
All right. What do you have? Are we talking Stormy? Who cannot talk Stormy Daniels and Trump hush money trial, right?
Right. And we can also advance things a little bit and talk about the federal judge down in Florida who essentially kicked the can on this documents case out of Mar-a-Lago. That's not going to start later this month. It had been sort of written in pencil. No one thought May 20th was really going to happen. But now it's on an indefinite hold. And then the news out of Georgia this morning in the alleged election interference case, the judge had ruled that the defense team, the Trump legal team, their challenge to having Fani Willis on the case, the judge said she should stay. But now an appellate court in Georgia will reconsider the issue, which means that case will probably also be pushed back until after the November elections. So it looks like this hush money Stormy Daniels case is the only one that may go to trial before November.
What a circus. Thank you, Rory. Thank you very much. Thanks, Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent.